All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry and I get the privilege of being your host today here on Veterans Radio. I am a CW-2 helicopter type pilot from Vietnam, and we founded Veterans Radio, Bob Gould, Ken Rogge, Gary Lilly and I in 2003, and we're coming up on our 14th anniversary, which is hard to believe. So we're encouraging everybody to send us emails or send us anything you want, just to acknowledge that. That's coming up on the 15th of November, actually, was the first program, 2003, over at the old WSDS here in Ypsilanti, Michigan. But today we're coming to you live from the studios of WAAM, Talk Radio 1600 here in Ann Arbor. And if you want to participate in the program today, feel free to give us a call locally. That number is 734-822-1600. Or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. And we'd love to have you on the program. We've got a lot of events that we're going to be talking about today. We've got a new sponsor that we're going to be introducing to you. And then our main guest today is Tom Philpott, and his book is called Glory Denied. And this is the story of Jim Thompson, who was, maybe many of you don't know the name, but Jim Thompson was the longest-held prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. Oh, my gosh, it was almost 9 years. And so we're going to be talking with Tom about Jim Thompson and the effects, of course, that his incarceration had and on him and his family. So I think it's really important that you stick around for that, because it's an uplifting, but it's a sad story as well, because everybody, of course, is affected by that event. So I'm encouraging you to stick around. That'll come around on the second half of the program. But right now we've got a couple of things that are going on in the local area, and one of them is sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans, which is, of course, one of our sponsors, and also Jim Falsone is one of our good friends and participants, and he hosts many of our podcasts and provides me a lot of information and stories for Veterans Radio. He's an integral part of our program these days, and he is sponsoring a movie night. Remember on our program we talked about the burn pits, and let me just remind you real quickly what these are. These were basically pits that were dug into the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan where they burn up everything that they don't need. And this can include waste, it can include paper, it can include computers, it could include burned up vehicles that weren't good anymore. So these burn pits were being burned, and they burned for hours and days on end. And a documentary has been made about this. It's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. And this is a very, very important documentary. And I would encourage all of you, if you get the opportunity, to go and see it, because it's going to be showing next week at the Phoenix Theaters. And this is going to be starting on Monday, November 6th. Tuesday, November 7th, and Wednesday, November 8th. So let's go with the days here. So November 6th is going to be shown at 2 and 7 p.m. at the Laurel Park Place in Livonia, Michigan. On Tuesday, November 7th, it's going to be shown at the State Wayne Theater on Michigan Avenue at the same 2 p.m., 7 p.m. And finally, on Wednesday, November 8th, it's going to be shown again at the Phoenix Theater in Monroe, Michigan, and that is at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Tickets are available at the theaters on a first-come, first serve basis. I encourage you to go and watch this documentary. I think you're going to find it not only compelling, but very, very important. This I think, is sort of like the Agent Orange for this generation of veterans, and it's very important that we see this. The toxic exposure and effects of the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Very powerful movie. If you want more information, you can contact Jim Falsone at Legal Help for Veterans. That number is 248-380-1818, and he's got more information on that. So hopefully I'll see you one of those nights in Livonia on Monday, in Wayne on Tuesday, and Monroe, Michigan on Wednesday, 2 o'clock, 7 o'clock at each location. This information is available on our website and also on Legal Help for Veterans, and I believe it's been posted on our Facebook page too. So there you go. Make sure you go and see this. I think it's very important, just another important issue. All right, there's another event coming up shortly, and I'm banging the microphone. Sorry, Derek. And this is a fundraiser for the Fisher House, Michigan. And joining me on the line right now from Fisher House and Buddy to Buddy is our good friend at Veterans Radio, Kate Melcher. Kate, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on the phone. So tell me what's going on with Fisher House and what's coming up on the 9th of November. It's a busy week.
So let me correct the date because it is the 8th of November.
Throw that one out. Okay.
Yep, Wednesday evening, November 8th at 7 p.m. We're doing an event that we call a friendraiser because it's part of building the community around the veterans in our area. So speaking from Buddy to Buddy and from Fisher House, this is something that folks need to go to. It's a storytelling event called Stories of Service, an evening with veterans at Hill Auditorium. And there are going to be 5 keynote speakers, and they span every war from World War II through Iraq. And our host is Noah Galloway. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who ever watched Dancing with the Stars, you know that Noah is an Iraq vet, double amputee, and third-place finisher on Dancing with the Stars. He's written a book called, you know, Living with No Excuses, and he's got no excuse other than to show up in Ann Arbor on November 8th and host our event for us.
Well, I think that's really cool. And let me remind our audience again, that's November 8th. So if you don't go to the movies to see about the burn pits, this is where you need to be. And
that's right.
This is going to be at Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor. And it's an evening with veterans at Hill Auditorium, Stories of Service. This is to support Fisher House, Michigan, mainly. And where do they get tickets for this?
And tickets are free, most importantly.
Ooh,
we
great.
Want anybody and everybody to come. But tickets are going fast. We ask that you register online at www.storiesofservice.org. O-R-G. You just go on there, you get some free tickets, and we'll make sure we have a seat for you when you arrive. Doors at 6:30, main event at 7, November 8th, Hill Auditorium.
Awesome. Thanks, Kate. I can't wait. I'm sure that I will see you there that evening.
Excellent. Thanks, Dale. See you
All
then.
Right. Thank you. All right, that's Stories of Service, an evening with veterans at Hill Auditorium on November 8th, folks. November 8th. One of the posters had the wrong date on it. So November 8th, 2017. Doors open at 6:30. Main event is at 7 p.m. at Hill Auditorium. I went to one last year that was held at the Michigan Theater. This is great. These people tell just amazing stories, and I think you're going to appreciate it. So mark it on your calendar. Again, you'll probably, if you are one of our friends on Facebook, you'll probably get one of these over the next couple of days too. So stick around and make sure that you put that on your calendar. That's November 8th, 2017. Doors open 6:30, main event 7 p.m., Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor, Michigan. All right, now I want to introduce you to a young woman who is a new supporter of Veterans Radio, and her name is Carolyn Calhoun. And Carolyn, welcome to Veterans Radio. Did we lose her? Okay, we're going to try and call her in just a second. We'll call her right back. The number, let me tell you a little bit about Carolyn. Carolyn Owens is a principal and mortgage originator at Calhoun Mortgage Incorporated in Howell, Michigan, and she specializes in VA loans, which is why she contacted us. And so I want to make sure that you pay attention as we probably will get her back on the line here in just a second. Okay, there we go. They're nodding over there. So, okay, Carolyn, we got you?
Hey, Dale, how are you?
I am fine. How are you doing?
Good. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I was trying to do a little promo for you, and I'm glad that you called back, or we got a hold of you. So tell me all about Calhoun Mortgage, Inc.
Well, I'm a mortgage broker based out of Howell, Michigan, and I specialize in VA loans, and that's why I wanted to get involved with Veterans Radio. Thank you for having me on the show. I'd also like to say thank you to all the vets out there and all their families for their service. It's much appreciated. I have family members that served, both my father, my father-in-law. So I have much respect and understand the sacrifices that veterans and their families have to go through.
Well, I can tell you that I'm really happy that you decided to join our little family here on Veterans Radio. And the reason that I'm excited is that maybe you can dispel some of the myths that some people out there have about these VA loans.
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of times real estate agents will think that VA loans are bad loans, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They are they are the best performing loan program in the United States right now. It outperforms conventional and FHA programs. Veterans have a median FICO score of 741. Their average household income is just around $74,000. The average civilian household income is just around $56,000. So you can already see right there that they have a strong income.
Mm-hmm.
They have more liquid assets than most civilians. And the average loan amount is $260,000. So you can see right there that the veterans are not weak buyers just because it's a zero-down program. They've earned the right to use the VA loan, and so that's what I want to help teach people about it so that veterans can get into the homes that they deserve.
Well, I think that that's very important, and we appreciate all the work that you're going to be doing, Carolyn. And you glossed over one of the best parts of the VA loan, and that was the zero down.
Well, there's two good things about it. It's zero down, and then there's no private mortgage insurance.
Right.
The veteran qualify for more.
Mm-hmm.
If a veteran has a service-related disability, we can also sometimes waive the upfront funding fee.
That is true. I know. I got that myself.
Yes. Yeah. So it is a great program overall. The other common myth is that VA appraisers are bad. VA appraisers are the same appraisers that are going out there and appraising the homes for conventional and FHA loans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really big misconception out there that I just want to help debunk so that veterans can get their homes.
Well, I think one of the things that might go on with that, with the VA appraisers, is that sometimes sellers don't necessarily want to work with the VA.
And again, it just goes back to the myth. So
yes.
A lot of these times sellers are getting their information from real estate agents that might say, ooh, they're going to pick this house apart, or they're going to do this, or they're going to do that. And a lot of times it's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I see more problems with FHA or conventional appraisals than I do with VA appraisals.
Well, there's a big thing. Hey, I got another question for you. On VA loans, I've noticed and I've been getting a lot of stuff in the mail. Unfortunately, I didn't know you before I financed my home with a VA loan again, that when interest rates go down, people or veterans can refinance their mortgage with very limited costs.
Correct, yeah. They can do a streamlined refinance that's called an IRL.
Okay.
And help them to get into a lower interest rate. I do also have to caution people that you will get a lot of spam mail,
yes.
Not just veterans, anybody, that as soon as you obtain a mortgage, they're going to start bombarding you with saying, we can give you a better interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that interest rate, though, does come along with a lot of other costs that sometimes people just aren't aware of. So you might start off with a loan at $150,000, and before you know it, you're at $160,000. Or, you know, 155, something around there, because of all the added fees, you're buying discount points and all that stuff. But
mm-hmm.
That's a whole other conversation.
That is a whole other conversation. But the main thing there is also that you're extending your loan again to that 30-year mark, or
exactly.
whatever yours happens to be.
Exactly, yes. Yep. There are other options that you could
mm-hmm.
do as well, but, yeah. So it's important to talk to somebody that's going to have your best interest at heart, somebody that's going to want to protect you through the process and isn't going to just look at you as a paycheck. Because unfortunately, sometimes that's what people do. And
yeah.
A lot of these big companies will do that as well.
Well, we know you're not going to do that.
No. I take pride in taking care of my clients and making sure that they have the best program to fit their needs.
Okay. So of our listeners that are out there are all clamoring to get at their phones now to call Calhoun Mortgage Incorporated. How do they do that? Did I lose her again? I did. Okay. Well, try and get her back. I can give you a little bit of this information while we're trying to figure out what happened out there. Well, first of all, you can give her a call, and her personal number is 517-225-5250. That's her office number, and her direct line to Carolyn Calhoun is 517-404-5855. That's 517-404-5855. Or you can drop an email to her on their website. And their website is CalhounMortgageInc.com. That's CalhounMortgageInc.com. www.thebetterhomes.com. And so give her a call. Shoot her an email. There's a contact form on there. There's all kinds of information on their website, so I think she'll be able to help you out. And I think she's back on the line. Not yet. Okay. So it looks like either her phone or our phone is going a little nutto here. So that's Calhoun Mortgage Incorporated. As I said, the website is CalhounMortgageInc.com. And I'm going to give him about 30 seconds to get her back on, and then we got to move on. So it's social email. You can follow her on Facebook. You can follow her, it looks like, Instagram and email. Let's see. What else have we got here? We got her? Okay. Carolyn, you back?
I love technology.
I know, because it's probably going to disappear again real quick. So how quickly, I gave them some phone numbers and stuff. How do they contact you?
So if you go onto your website as well, you'll see a link to my website. It says Calhoun Mortgage, Inc. You can click there, and it has all my information. You can also reach me directly at the office line at 517-225-5250.
Okay, we got it. Calhoun Mortgage, give her a chance. I think she will earn your business, and I think that she'll do a good job for you. So thank you, Carolyn, very much for being on the program. Thank you very much
for
becoming a sponsor of Veterans Radio, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Yes, thank you as well, Dave. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. So make sure you give Carolyn a call there and check her out as far as Calhoun Mortgage is concerned. We've got Fisher House coming up on the 8th of November at the Stories for Service. And we've also got our Burn Pit movie nights on November 6th, 7th, and 8th, each day at a different location. Check our website. This is up there as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have our guest. He's going to be Tom Philpott, and he's the author of Glory Denied, The Vietnam Saga of Jim Thompson, America's Longest-Held Prisoner of War, a most compelling story. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this. We're here on Veterans Radio, and I'm your host today. My name is Dale Thronberry, and my guest right now I'm bringing on is Tom Philpott, and he is the author of Glory Denied. Let me give you a little information on Tom here real quick. He is a writer for Military Times, and he's been a writer for Army Times, and he's been a writer for a lot of different people over his career. And he's just a great guy, and I'm anxious to talk with him about not only his book, but about other things that he's been involved in. This book first came out in hardback, gosh, almost over 10 years ago, and it just came out in paperback a little while ago, and that's when I got my hands on it. And it's just a great story of a troubled young man, well, because he's younger than I am. So anybody is a young man. So Tom Philpott is a syndicated columnist, freelance writer. His weekly column, Military Update, appears in more than 40 daily newspapers in the United States, and he hails from Virginia. So, Tom, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to have an opportunity to talk about Jim Thompson and his long saga.
It is a long saga, and this is not the most uplifting story that we're going to have on Veterans Radio, but it is a very important story. We started off with our little music about Vietnam, and this is something that just won't go away. It's been over 50 years now since that war began and, quote, officially began, and Jim was there before that.
Jim was there. He was one of the first Special Forces team assigned to Vietnam, after the buildup, Kennedy created the Green Berets, Special Forces, and he put them, they were the advance of our engagement in the Vietnam War in the early 60s, and Jim Thompson, by December of 1963, 9 years before the war would end, was sent to Vietnam to head up a small special forces team, an A team, mm-hmm. just two officers and 10 soldiers, and they were supposed to strengthen the resistance to the Viet Cong in Quezon area and very northern upper reaches of South Vietnam.
So tell me how Jim got involved in the military in the first place. In reading the book, I found out he's from New Jersey, which is where I'm from as well, and I had not really heard that much about him, and that's probably one of the main points of the story.
Well, it is. He was a very reluctant draftee, and in fact, when I began to research the book in the mid-'80s, the war had been over more than a decade by that time, and if you had asked the typical person who paid attention to military affairs who was the longest-held prisoner of war in Vietnam, it would have been Everett Alvarez, a pilot mm-hmm. who was shot down 4 months after Jim Thompson was captured. And the book is about why we didn't know about him, why the Army, why his family declined to put his name on the bracelets of 5 million Americans wore during the Vietnam War to remember the prisoners of war, and why once he got home we still didn't know much about him until the book came out.
Well, it's a very interesting story to say the least, because you know he was pretty gung ho. Once he got into the military, he was pretty gung ho, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He, as I said, he was a reluctant draftee, and in fact, the book contains some letters home talking to his parents mm-hmm. and to Alice about how he wasn't. He was disappointed in the rest of the people who were in the Army. He didn't want to hang around to be a lifer. He only some of the careers he admired, but no one else. And then his attitude changed. He got an appointment to OCS. He was a recruiting officer and enjoyed that, and he found that the military was a way for him to support his family in a nice style as an officer. And then, not many people know this, but the Special Forces cadres were populated by a lot of non-volunteers. It wasn't all volunteers to fill the Special Forces ranks of the military. When Kennedy wanted to build up from a couple of hundred Special Forces soldiers to several thousand, the Army did that quickly, and they did that with a lot of non-volunteers.
I didn't know that. So everybody pay attention. You're going to learn a lot today. It's the book is really kind of interesting because it's not just your own writing. It's also you've uncovered letters and conversations with many of the people that Jim was a prisoner with, and plus, what his wife went through in 8 years of almost 9 years of, captivity, and how that whole thing affected their whole family.
Yes, Dale, it's told in an oral history format, mm-hmm. and the reason I latched on to that, I've been a writer for many years, even at the time that I had begun this researching this book, and always just wrote in a narrative fashion, not an oral history style. But what I found was Jim Thompson was a stroke victim by the time I ran across his story, living alone down in Key West, Florida. And I went down to visit, and Jim couldn't speak. He had what often stroke victims have, expressive aphasia, mm-hmm. and he was unable to speak very clearly. He couldn't tell his own story. He walked over to a reel-to-reel tape recorder he had in his living room and turned it on, and it was an interview of him being interviewed soon after he got back on a radio show. And he spoke clearly, and here was his strong voice. And he gave me permission on that visit in 1986 to research his story. And I decided to sustain the story with the actual words. I interviewed more than 160 people. And more than 80 of those voices tell the story, including Jim Thompson. It turns out he had given hours of interviews to Reader's Digest Project about POWs, and most of those interviews have never been published. It was used in a book called POW.
Oh, okay.
And Reader's Digest gave me permission to use the transcripts of those interviews, so I have Jim's voice along with the voices of all the other people associated with his life, before he went to Vietnam, during Vietnam, and then how his family and the trials he went through afterwards. His life sort of, it couldn't get much worse than being a POW, but it got very bad once he came home.
Yes, and unfortunately, after reading the book, it came to the realization that a lot of those POWs' lives were not quite as we thought.
No. We all remember the very uplifting photos and the videos of POWs coming home and the families rushing into their arms. But many of those marriages had broken up within a few months or a few years of their return. And what happened is these periods of captivity put enormous strain on families. And it was during, you'll recall, Dale, during a time of upheaval in society, the Vietnam War era, women's liberation, a liberalization of the mores of society. And the POWs were these Rip Van Winkles, sort of, that had woken up and society had changed in many ways in America. And many of these wives were learned to live so that they made decisions for the families. And then you have men returning who had gone through horrific experiences in the war. And there were clashes as the families tried to reunite. Some of them, we have the inspirational stories like the Stockdales,
right,
where she had fought to get the prisoners released and be treated for a group of women. And you had Alice Thompson, married to Jim Thompson in this case, who went off and lived with another man for 8 of the 9 years he's in captivity and denied permission for his name to be put on these bracelets. But what the story of Gloria Nye tells you is not just the heroism of Jim and all his escape attempts and how he possibly endured 9 years in captivity, but why Alice made the decisions that she did. And I think you'll come away with a greater understanding of what a woman of that generation and that background faced when she this unbelievable situation that both of them were in.
I think that's a very important point right there. I mean, we've talked about the changes in the decade of the 1960s anyway. Actually, we did a program on that a couple of months ago, I think it was. Now, even just the music and how it evolved over that 10-year time period, and, of course, the social life and everything else that went along with it. So let's start off a little bit here by talking about what happened to Jim and how he ended up being a prisoner of war.
Yes, well, he was in Vietnam about 3 months with this team. They were going to be there for a year, and they would put patrols out of South Vietnamese forces. Nungs, which were fighters that was of Chinese descent. They had mountain yards around them. They were the native villagers in the highlands of northern South Vietnam. So that was the mix, and it was a really challenging mix for any team to manage. And Jim's team was probably one of the most inexperienced. They had been training for Africa for assignment. They were learning a different language to be assigned to Central Africa. And all of a sudden, with the buildup in Vietnam, he was assigned to Khe Sanh, which was a remote area in Vietnam at the time. And no one on the team spoke Vietnamese. No one on the team spoke even French well, which was the second language after years of colonization in France. So Jim was running a team there, a pretty isolated issue. And one day an Air Force plane came in to bring the mail, an L-19 bird dog. And Jim's sergeant wasn't there. He was back getting supplies, and he hopped aboard the observation aircraft. If it had extra fuel, which this did, they would take it up and look around over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, try to spot activity of the Viet Cong in the area, mm-hmm. which was the communist forces they were fighting. And Jim advised the pilot, Richard Whitesides, to fly below the flight minimums to get a better look at the activity on the ground, and they were shot out of the sky by small arms fire. Whitesides was killed, and Jim was captured, and that began his long ordeal. His first 4 years were spent in South Vietnam in jungle camps, very crude, very challenging, and in total isolation from other Americans.
But it was it's a terrible story, and his your telling of the explanation of what occurred to him while he was still in South Vietnam is just gut-wrenching to anybody who's ever been there. I think this he got shot down in 1964. I was still in high school, and he didn't get out of there until 1973 when I was done with my time in the service. So a lot of things occurred in that time period there. So he is captured, and of course, he was injured in the plane crash as it crashed. Correct?
Yes, he was taken prisoner by mountain yards who were sympathetic to the Viet Cong, and they knew that they had an American prisoner, and they would cart him around on a stretcher, a crude stretcher at the time. Jim felt that he had broken his back. He had a gunshot wound across his cheek. He had various other injuries, and he was unable to walk. So they carted him for several months through the jungles on a stretcher. And then in time, he was turned over to the Viet Cong. And he had several attempts early months after he began to walk. Within that first year, he probably had three escape attempts that it was really just Jim trying to walk away. And then he would pretend to be out there in the jungles to relieve himself when they found him and he was carted back. But then he had a real escape attempt and was brutalized. And then this torture really began for him at one point, Dale. He was held to 4 months in a cage that was 2 feet high, 2 feet wide, and about 5 feet long. And he's Jim Thompson was a man of about 5'8", 5'9", height. So he was on his side for all those months, except for every day for 10 minutes he was allowed out of the cage and then tossed back in it.
Wow. We're talking with Tom Philpott, who's the author of Glory Denied, a story of Jim Thompson, America's longest-held prisoner of war, here on Veterans Radio. Feel free to give us a call if you'd like at 734-822-1600. When I was reading this, it was really difficult reading when you think about the tortures that he went through as a prisoner of war, especially because he was still in South Vietnam. He was not up in Hanoi. He was not up, with all the pilots and so forth. He was on the ground, mostly by himself because you mentioned he was in solitary confinement for, 5 years?
Yes. The first 4 years, really, he never – first 3 years, he never saw another American for about 3.5 years. Then in 1967, he was put on the Ho Chi Minh Trail himself and marched 29 days north to a prisoner of war camp where he was kept in Bao Cao, it was called, where he was still kept in isolation for another year. And it frightened to death the other Americans. Many of them were captured in the Tet Offensive of 68. Mm-hmm. Some of them were Army civilians, some Navy civilians, some were soldiers. But they would get a glimpse of Thompson peering out of their own cells, and he frightened them to death. Because they couldn't believe he was still alive, and they looked at him like he was their future.
Right, and let's explain to our audience how much weight did he lose, or what did he get down to?
He was captured at 178 pounds, and he was at his lowest point. He was below 100 pounds.
Ooh.
So he
you know,
had.
I know you describe him as people thinking he was an old man.
Right. Absolutely. He had bouts with dysentery. He had malaria. They fed him a very crude diet. They would, he would have long interrogation sessions where he would be beaten, for a statement. And you mentioned, Dale, that so many of the prisoners of war were pilots who were shot down over North Vietnam, and they were held in the same prisons together. They were able to establish a code of communicating with each other. When they were brutalized and did make statements, they could get comfort from their fellow POWs by tapping in code, saying what they had said to the enemy, and they would get back from their compatriots that that's fine, I had to admit the same kind of things, where they would admit war crimes and so forth. Thompson didn't have any of that psychological support. When he would resist it, he would just be, tortured. And when he finally did make a statement, he had no, support from any other person saying, don't feel guilty about this, Jim. We all went through it.
I think what's interesting is for our audience to understand that the statement that he said was that he was being treated kindly, fed well, and was in good health.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I don't remember reading anywhere where he said that it was a horrible war or anything like that.
No, that was no statements were released during by any of the POWs saying truthfully how they were held.
Right.
But when he was finally put into cells next to other Americans, if I can read you one passage, it's not very long, but it's from a warrant officer who was in the next cell.
That would have been a helicopter pilot.
That's right, Mike O'Connor.
Okay.
He said the guards left the top of this half of our cell doors open about 15 minutes a day. We could sit on our leg stocks and look out. And when open, the door blocked our view of the next cell. But one day, I looked through a crack near the hinge and saw the guy next door. He was standing right next to me. This guy is dead, I thought, as part of some cruel joke. I thought they had stuck a corpse up against the door. Then I realized he was moving. He looked like something out of Auschwitz. I remember seeing pictures in Life magazine years earlier of those World War II prisoners. This guy looked like that. I didn't know how he stood it, how he breathed, how he did anything. His features were so distorted. Later, when we washed up, I could literally see his entire skeleton and the balls of his joints around his knees and elbows. 99 persons out of 100 would have thought he was dead. His stomach was completely wrapped under his rib cage. That's the kind of conditions that the other Americans found Jim Thompson in.
Right, and he had also gone through the tortures that we have heard about, of being hung upside down, and you know your elbows are tied behind your back, and then they hoist you up on a beam, and so on and so forth. I'm just amazed. I not only why he didn't just die, but he was why they just didn't kill him. What was it? What was his value to them?
Well, that's interesting. There's been a lot of speculation. I think there were a lot of prisoners of war who, if they were extraordinary resistors, if they had posed dangers to the guards, for example, they would die in captivity. They'd be starved to death or brutalized or something. Jim was starved to the point of almost dying. But he always had a way with his guards of resisting in a way that they understood, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they respected him, I think. They knew he was a special forces officer where he was from. They had all the details of the camp, and I guess that would be passed from cadre to cadre. And it was worth value, I guess, to just hold on to an American that he could survive in their midst. The nature was that all these prisoners who were captured in the South, they had the lowest proportion of survival because they had very crude medical treatments, if they got any treatments at all. A spider bite could kill them, or bouts of malaria and so forth. So it was remarkable. The prisoners who served with Jim during this period of time last saw him when he had what looked like to them a severe heart attack and was just taken out of his cell on a stretcher, and they thought for sure that he was dead. And then 5 years later, they heard that he had joined them in the north and were stunned.
Wow. We need to take a break in just a second here. So when we come back, we're going to get him up to Hanoi and get him home, all right?
All right.
All right. We're talking with Tom Philpott of Glory Denied is the book, the Vietnam Saga of Jim Thompson, America's longest-held prisoner of war. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we will be back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Hey, what's up, man?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Man.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Tom Philpott, talking about his book, Glory Denied, the story of Jim Thompson, America's longest-held prisoner of war. Jim is spending all this time trying to survive, and he made up to survive, he lived in his memories, didn't
yes.
he?
Yes, he did. In fact, he built a dream house over and over right. and over in his mind. He idealized his wife and his family. He knew when he went to Vietnam that he had three toddler, all girls. His wife Alice was pregnant, and he was certain that it was a boy. At the time, they didn't have most people didn't know whether it was going to be a boy or a girl when the child was born, but Jim was certain it was going to be a boy, and he was correct. And the day after he was shot down, Alice got word, and she went into labor, and Jim Jr. was born. And Jim kept his sanity by building the dream house for his family. And he also was a very religious person who... when he returned, he said, the faith in God, faith in country, and faith in the love of a good woman is what sustained him. But Alice is the other half of the Glory Denied story and what right. the family went through. And it's when you first hear the things like that she lived with another man, she told several of the children that their father was dead. She never mentioned his existence to the son, who was almost nine years old, when Jim was released. And you think of, and at one point she tried to have him declared dead. So you think, well, you've already made a judgment about her, but you need to read the book and her story.
Absolutely.
And what she went through. And it wasn't the idealized life that Jim had imagined for Alice. And, of course, she was a young woman with four children and seeing her support structure disintegrate around her.
Well, I think the other thing is that she kept getting letters every month that they didn't know where Jim was.
Yeah.
And, they didn't know whether he was dead, alive, prisoner of war, or whatever. And I'm assuming, maybe I shouldn't assume this, but, that were paychecks continuing to come through? Whereas, she advised as to what her benefits and options might be?
Yes. Yes, she, he was listed as missing in action for about a year and a half. And I told you about the tape recording that he made after
right.
being tortured. That tape recording was heard on a radio that was monitored by the State Department, I believe, or the military, and they collected that recording and they played it for Alice, and she identified it as her husband because he had a distinct way, she said, of drawing in breath before he went on to his sentence and was several between sentences, or and that changed Jim's status from missing in action to a prisoner of war. Alice didn't realize that. By that time, she had moved in with another man, a sergeant who she met, who was retiring from the military. He had his own broken family. He had children to raise. They combined families, and Alice believed that her husband couldn't have survived the ordeal. As the years passed, you might remember the story of Nick Rowe, who was a special forces officer who escaped about after 5 years of confinement. She actually went to a lecture by Nick Rowe about what he went through, and she said, there's no way that my husband could have survived that. Mm-hmm. And it was a great shock to her when the names were released of her husband coming home. And that's when she had to confront the very dramatic circumstances of having to tell her children who their real father was.
Right. And I think the whole idea of not knowing what was going on had to be the most difficult part of that story, because, of course, he didn't know what was happening. He had this idealistic idea of what was happening in his head. I mean, he built a magic house. He had his own, you know, church in the sky type
right.
of things going on. And he just kept, from what you've written, you know, he kept bragging on his children, even though he hadn't seen them in years and years and years. And of course, they
yes.
grew up in the most tumultuous decade, probably in American history, it seemed like. So when Alice was faced with the idea of telling her children, that had to be difficult.
She was a wreck, as she said, just an absolutely nervous wreck. There were people, she would say, like John Birch Society folks calling her up and harassing her, and she was getting reports from the press. Well, who is this guy that was being recognized? Now, all this time while Jim was in captivity, people were celebrating the heroism of Everett Alvarez, a Lieutenant J.G., when he was shot down, and a pilot, and there was word that would get out about Alvarez and the other pilots, and you'd see photographs of them on propaganda that the North Vietnamese would release and so forth. So Alvarez, it was January now of 1973, and the pilots were being brought together. I mean, all the prisoners were being brought together, and they brought up the Army folks who were held a little farther in southern North Vietnam, and they tapped to Alvarez. They, hey, Ev, there's somebody here who's been held longer than you. And he said, what? Who's that? And he said, Jim Thompson. And he said he remembered reading some propaganda about Jim Thompson probably shortly after he made the statement and knew that his capture date is, but I think he was surprised that he had survived too. And the Vietnamese released Alvarez about 5 weeks before Thompson. So he was celebrated once again as the longest-held POW when he came home on the first flight. Then 5 weeks later, you can imagine how the country had been saturated with stories about POWs. And then Thompson comes home, and the Army says he's the longest-held in Vietnam. And he got very little attention. And indeed, Jim didn't want so much attention because he was trying to repair his own family at the time.
Right. So let's bring him home. We've got about 5 minutes to go, Tom. So we've got him home, and his homecoming wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, because Alice had decided that she was going to try and save the whole family if she could.
Yes. It was more that Jim was the... said he dreamt of this, Dale, of building this dream house and seeing if he could overcome Alice's unfaithfulness. This was what he wanted to build in his own mind. And so he asked Alice, let's give it a go. And she left the man that had raised her children for those years up in Massachusetts. And you can imagine how disorienting that was for the children. But just a little bit before that, what Jim got, everyone else got files that said what their, you can imagine, letters from their family, loving letters from them when they landed in the Philippines. Jim got a folder with a pay stub. That was it. And he said, where's my family? And they said, Massachusetts. They had been in North Carolina and was captured. Why are they in Massachusetts? And his escort officer lied to him and said he didn't know, which broke that trust.
Right.
But then, but it was a hellacious time for the Thompson children, for Alice and Jim, as he tried to repair his family. And he was facing alcoholism, which began to rage after he returned and tried to rebuild his career, his family, and to forget about what he'd just gone through.
It's a most compelling story, and we're leaving out half of it, Tom. And I want to make sure maybe we can get you to come back and we can finish this up on the story of Jim Thompson. But could you describe just briefly, we've got about 2 minutes left, what did happen to Jim Thompson real quickly?
About a year after the book came out, he passed away. He had, by that time, when the book came out, he had mixed feelings about the book because Alice and he were estranged. You know, they tried to repair their marriage, and it didn't last for more than a year. Mm-hmm. Jim tried to struggle with alcoholism, and then he had a terrible stroke, which left him unable to tell his story, and he went down to Key West, and he lived by himself, estranged from his family, and he passed away about a year after the book had come out. Alone, and it was a very sad ending
to his story, and his family just went through all kinds of turmoil, and so we'll figure out how to get you back on so we can finish that. Where can we get this book?
Oh, you can order it through Amazon. You can find it online. It's an ebook now, and so I would just go to Amazon.com. It's probably the best way to find it and download it on your reading device, or order it in paperback.
All right, or you can order it off of our website. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the bookstore, and it's right there. It says "Glory Denied," and you can get that. In the last minute, tell me real fast that somebody made an opera out of this.
Exactly right. Tom Tripulo, a brilliant composer, very much recognized in the world of classical music, turned it into an opera that had its premiere in 2007. Right now, it will be put on next week in the 6th and the 9th by the Houston Grand Opera. And Tri-Cities Opera Company in Hampton, New York, is putting it on a week after that for Veterans Day.
Wow. I think that'd be great to see. I think it'd be an interesting interpretation.
It's a powerful opera. He's a brilliant composer, and the singers are amazing. And what they do is juxtapose young and old Jim and young and old Alice. Just four characters, but it's a wonderful story.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom Philpott, author of Glory Denied. You've got to read this story if you want to know the true story of America's POWs. This is one of them to do that. Thank you very much, Tom. Until next week, you're all dismissed.